You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
All right. Welcome back to another episode of Friends from Work, a podcast about all things in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, hosted by me, Robbie Earl, and by my co-host and longtime friend from work, Kyle Sconewell.
Yes.
Welcome back to this second stage of our Ironheart coverage here, as we will be wrapping up with episodes 4 through 6.
Mm-hmm.
And finishing the series here. Before we jump totally into Ironheart, this is kind of working out well for us timing-wise because we are recording this. You know, we got to see all 6 episodes ahead of time, which was great. That's not always the case with screeners, but I feel like that was helpful in this instance. But we chose to break it up and recorded it kind of in the same way that they're being released,
mm-hmm.
so that we watched the first 3 and recorded last episode, and now we're back. But I do appreciate that as we're recording this episode, the first 3 have already released.
Yeah.
So it's kind of given me an opportunity to take the temperature of the general like film and TV community, the Marvel fan community, our community, and hasn't really changed my feelings on the show, but it is always interesting to kind of see what the narratives are coming out the gate. And so I think it'll at least be helpful for us to kind of talk with that context as we're getting into the last 3 episodes.
Sure. You know, I think on the last episode, I said that I thought it'd have like 68 to 70%. And I think it debuted at 72%.
I saw that. Yeah.
I feel like if anything, it's only justified everything I thought. I was nervous ahead of time, obviously, that it was going to be kind of a throwaway show. They weren't really hyping it much. Then I watched it. I'm like, wow, this is actually pretty good. And so I kind of thought, I feel like it's like an 80 or an 82%. And I assumed there'd be some critical things that, like, I thought I'd be on the higher end of that. But I think overall, you have to view it as a massive win, correct? Don't you at this point?
Yeah. I mean, I thought these are reviews that were a little hard for me to parse through just because, and this happens sometimes with MCU projects, and this is not me being overly defensive. There are some where it's just like, okay, they don't like it. This is why they don't like it. That makes sense, whether you agree or not. Then every now and then there are projects like this that the criticism that is out there seems very like you read the headlines and it's like, oh, this what they're saying is this is a show that's got some flaws but is ultimately good, or like maybe it could be better, these are the reasons why it's not as good as it could be or whatever. And then you start reading the actual review and there aren't that many things that I feel like people are legitimately criticizing. It's more just kind of this sense of like, another, you know, this is a meh thing that Marvel's doing. And it just makes me think that, again, like we said last episode, I wonder how much of this narrative would be different if this show had come out in 2022 and not in 2025. Just because people are interpreting all of it through like a different lens, which is all to say, my understanding is it's getting, I mean, 72% is fine. Like, I think it's been generally well received. Mm-hmm. I think the last couple episodes from a fan perspective are going to be better received than the first three. So I think that it's only going to go up. But I always think it's interesting to look at how much that lens impacts like the analysis of the project. And that's, you know, why I think rewatches wind up being helpful for us.
Yeah, no doubt. I think you're right. I also think you're a little more aware of that stuff than I am. For the most part, I saw people pretty happy with it. There were a couple mainstream outlets like IGN that said it was mediocre, which
yeah,
I'm not going to die. Like, it's fine.
I looked around at kind of some of the big reviewers.
There were a lot of people that had the same. I was actually justified, or not justified, but I was excited about a lot of people having a similar opinion, which was like, whoa, this is pretty great and looks pretty great. And, you know, a couple of the critiques I agree with. So let's actually start right there for a second.
Yeah.
And by the way, I just kind of, this has nothing to do with anything, but I'm just thinking it's interesting that we're recording this now we're recording this a little bit early. So the reaction to 4 through 6 is not out yet. So, I think people are going to be loving it. And I think they're going to want to talk about what I'm going to get into here in a second is what I think the lasting thought's going to be, but I don't know that yet. We're not recording after the reaction. I was really quick want to say we are on the doorstep of Fantastic Four. And as we sit here today, the final trailer for the Fantastic Four film came out and it looked so cool.
I loved it.
I'm so excited about Ironheart. I actually turned a big project in today. I literally went for a walk today and just posted on our Instagram. Like, I'm just having one of those days where you feel pretty good about life. Like, a lot of stuff is going well. Some summer plans fell into place and we're going to Comic-Con. So now I kind of have like my whole summer figured out. It feels like, and this is a good era for the MCU with this show being a win and then Fantastic Four coming up in just a few weeks now. And you really look back at it. I posted this on Instagram. Like, Marvel is cooking right now in television world. Like, the last four, if you go backwards, Ironheart is a surprise. People thought it would be terrible. Now it's great. It's not great, but it's really, really good.
Yeah.
The previous show, Daredevil was well received. Agatha was well received. And before that, your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man came out of nowhere and I thought was like really great for animation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Outside of Brave New World, if Fantastic Four is a slam dunk, this is about as good as the MCU gets, honestly.
Yeah.
So it's a fun era. That's all I want to say. Okay. I want to start today's episode by saying I felt two critiques here. Just so I can get them out of the way, because everything else is overwhelmingly positive and oh my gosh, the ending. That's what I want to talk about. But the first two critiques are, I felt like, per our last episode, Zeke's turn happened a little quickly. Like, Zeke's turn to me makes more sense if you have 9 episodes and there's a couple more episodes where he's stuck in jail and like really stewing over it. We talked about how I was okay with him not becoming like a villain, and I'm mixed on that. So when he started becoming like really pissed at Riri and trying to fight her, I was like, oh man, they are doing it. But then they kind of back off on it. It doesn't lead to like a massive battle. He's kind of like okay with it. They make jokes, but then he says like, you know, we're not good. And he doesn't turn into like Iron Man 2.0. Yeah. So it's kind of in the middle. They kind of did the middle route. So that was one critique though. For a second, I was like, is this happening a little too fast? Yeah.
I actually felt like I was tracking that pretty closely for that reason, because we had talked about it. And also, it was like, I mean, that's one of the problems with the 6-issue model or 6-episode model anyway, is I feel like sometimes the pacing just gets like spread out in some ways and way condensed in others.
But on that note, I feel like overall, outside of Zeke, the pacing was pretty good for 6 episodes. This is one where I felt like 6 was a win for the most part.
And I actually didn't, I thought that the way that they handled that felt pretty natural to me, because I mean, he's in prison. I mean,
minor critique. Yeah. Yeah.
Like it would be different if Riri had started working with him and then she went and used his tech. And then suddenly he just has like a, you know what? I really like this. I like being bad. I'm a bad guy now. Like that is something where I would have been like, all right, like we don't need this.
But the fact that he's not trying to like fulfill his father's legacy.
Right. He's just
angry.
He's angry because she promised that she wouldn't do the one thing she did. She like really kind of like bullied him into doing that in a way that felt unnecessary. And then now he's in prison. she's not getting any heat for what she did, and he's getting all of it and just getting dragged. And then Parker comes in and offers to actually do something about it to help him. And so, I mean, I think it all, yep. And then he takes the deal with the understanding that he's just, it's transactional. Like, he's not like, it's not like Spider-Man 3 where like Venom and Sandman team up because they both just want to like take it to Spider-Man. It's like his understanding is, you're getting me out of here. I'm helping you take down Ironheart. He doesn't kill her, which I think is important because that kind of maintains that he's not like a psychopath.
Yeah.
And then I think he kind of, whenever the deal gets changed, he's kind of looking for the first available exit. And so, yeah, to me, it all felt like pretty believably handled, not to negate the critique.
No. But it's not even really a critique. I'm just trying to get these out of the way. The only other thing is, yes, I know through six episodes, there are maybe 3 to 5 times where the Hood's gang feels a little Disney Channel-esque for a second. Like when they come into the restaurant, which is funny to me that it's White Castle. I think it was White Castle.
Yeah.
When they, like, there's a few times where it's like, okay, a little bit young adult-ish, but I am thankful that they kind of flip that on its head like pretty quick afterwards, usually. Like usually something serious happens to where you're like, okay, they don't have a chance to do that.
Yeah.
But that's my own, that's literally my only other thing is a couple times I was like, ooh, this is a little, don't go there. Like when in episode 4, when the magic starts happening, I didn't want it to turn into like Disney Channel magic for a second. And I was really stunned that it was happening. So I was just like, oh man, are we going to go this route? And so like, for like, I'm talking 30 seconds. Yeah. I was like, hopefully not. And then they don't. So those are my only two things to kick off the episode.
It's also why I'm that's where I'm grateful for them releasing this the way that they are, because I watched episode 4 and that's when I started having those concerns where I was like, is this going to start going down a weird path? And because it felt like there was an opportunity for it to kind of lose the things that I thought the show was doing well and then start adding in some like weird cheesiness. Sure. And I think if this had a whole week to kind of stew in that episode, not that it was a bad episode, it had like, it winds up ending on a totally different note anyway, but still, I think like it that would be a situation where you kind of start running with fears that are not really grounded.
Like, whereas, are they going to do a Jin turn here?
Yeah. But instead if you just go straight to 5 and 6, it's like, no, like they actually, that element is introduced for a reason. I think if they had not introduced that at all, or at least some version of it, then I think the reveal at the very end would have felt super out of left field. Like if the whole thing is just like, there's something vaguely sinister and now she's talking with the devil. But I like the fact that she like has her armor upgraded in that way. And all of that kind of relies on her having at least like magical consultant.
Okay. So I need to be clear really quickly. I'm about to geek out about the magic. I think the magic is a massive win overall. Just for a second in like the candy shop, I'm like, ooh, like, is this going to be weird? I also think I am infinitely more prepped for it because of Agatha. The fact that this releases after Agatha, like in the first episode of Ironheart, when you're just watching episode 1, having not seen the others, I didn't really catch that, you know, her mom has this friend that's kind of like a hippie. And they're like burning incense. Yeah. And I was kind of like, haha, that's funny, hippie. But now it's actually a little bit of foreshadowing to this moment. Like I didn't realize she's actually into some kind of witchcraft a little bit. And I'm more okay with it because of Agatha. So I think there was a moment in episode 4, and I mean this on the positive side of things now, where she's sitting at the table with her friend and her friend is sketching out Dormammu and going over that. And I paused it to Annika, like excited, going, I cannot believe we are doing this. I texted a friend asked me, and he's like, did I see you turned your opinion on Ironheart? You like it? I'm like, dude, it's pretty freaking great. He says to me, what do I need to watch ahead of time? And I was like, honestly, probably Doctor Strange and Wakanda Forever. And he wrote, Doctor Strange? And he literally wrote, I'm trying to think what you could even mean by that. So I pause it and go, I cannot believe we are talking about Dormammu and Caecilius and what it did to Caecilius' body, the dark dimension. I mean, and I love it. Somehow I love it. I geeked out hardcore about those kind of tie-ins.
Well, and
who thought we'd be here?
And I told you this, like one of the things that I loved is that it winds up not being Dormammu because
I think, just that we're even talking about
it. Yeah, no, I mean, I thought it was, it's kind of what we talked about last episode. It just, to me, it makes the whole world feel a little bit more lived in because
it's also cool that other witches know of Dormammu,
right.
But apparently they don't know of Mephisto, which is kind of cool.
Or at least, it's like they know, it's almost like they know the amount about Dormammu that we know. You know, she's kind of like reciting these elements of that first movie plot. And I like that she's like, oh, I'm like 47% sure that that's who it is. And then it isn't, not just because it kind of follows through on that, but also because like, I don't know, again, I don't love the idea of her sitting down with this like witch in training who immediately knows exactly who the bad guy is and can tell her everything she needs to know. Like,
right. She gets it wrong, which is dope.
Yeah. I think that like it makes it feel like a more like nuanced and varied world that they're living in, not a world that's like all set up to get to a predetermined plot point, which is what I think it could have been.
So whenever we cover these episodes of television or even a movie, we try really hard not to talk ahead of time. But every once in a while, I'm so excited about what I saw that I call you and I blow your phone up until you answer. You're working, you're busy, and I just keep calling. And eventually you answer, and I say, look, we can't get into this because we need to save our initial reactions for the actual podcast. But as a friend and as a fan, if we didn't have a podcast, this is what I would be doing. I'd call you to say, what the heck? And my gosh, I just couldn't believe I was witnessing it was, one, that Sacha Baron Cohen is actually in this show, first of all. Two, that they don't reveal him until the finale, which is the shortest episode of the whole bunch. It's only 40 minutes long, and they don't reveal him. And yet somehow it totally works. Like you see it and you're like, I don't necessarily need, like, I'm not mad at the show for not giving more of him. Like, I'm fine to wait that long to show that he's actually the one behind it, but also then to not resolve it. I called you and I said, can you believe that Sacha Baron Cohen's in this, in that the editing of the finale where they trick you that she turns him down and you kind of see what it would look like if she turned him down, but then it comes back and she actually hasn't officially turned him down. Then you realize what you're seeing is not the turn down and her rebuilding the AI. It's that her friend is actually back from the dead because of a deal she made with Satan. And then it shows him shaking on it and her hugging and getting the same scars and the thing cuts. And I was like, let's go. They ended this by not only introducing Mephisto, he is the furthest thing from beaten at the end of this. In fact, it's worse than it was when we started.
Yeah.
Riri is in a worse spot now. So now we're left with like, oh my gosh, is she going to be dying of these scars? Like, can she break this deal ever? You know, like the hood seems like he kind of mostly got out of it by dropping the hood. What is her version of that? Like, how does she now get out of this? How does Mephisto even get beaten? And that's how they ended this show. A massive door open.
Yeah.
It's very similar to like Infinity War. Not to the same degree, obviously, but the same tone. And of the Loki season one finale.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it reminded me a lot of the Loki season one finale, which is high praise. Those rumors about him as Mephisto have been around for years now, like way back when they first started talking about Ironheart. And, you know, half that stuff, you never really know what to believe. And then even if it was real at some point, you wonder what stuck over time. But that casting works so well that I really... Whatever people think about Ironheart, whatever legs the show has and like Riri as a character has, I feel like it would be a waste to not carry him forward into either a Doctor Strange project or something kind of adjacent, because he is a great addition.
And Coogler, although this was filmed before Doomsday, recently said to the public that this actually fits pretty well as a lead up into what's going to happen in Doomsday. And so I'm not saying there's any specifics. He's probably just generically saying that so that it praises the show. But again, never thought that there would be elements of Ironheart that would kind of tie in to because I so immediately when I they reveal that it's Mephisto, I googled Mephisto, which I had never done, and so I found like the Marvel Wikipedia page, and I was reading all about his history. Didn't realize that in the comics he's made deals with all kinds of people, all kinds of people, but one of which is Dr. Doom.
Yeah, yeah,
that he's made deals with apparently over like Dr. Doom's mother.
Yeah,
I guess, and stuff like this. I don't know what this Wikipedia page said. But my point is, like, there is a way that, you know, Mephisto's around in, like, let's say Doctor Strange 3 or Doctor Doom is not defeated in Doomsday and a movie in between or something.
Yeah.
He's around, or, you know.
And
it seems like he's kind of a nagging character that's always around. It seems like.
I think that's right. I mean, he's kind of a trump card within the comics at certain points. Like, he was used do the Spider-Man reset that led into Brand New Day in the comics, and you may have seen that. He's also he basically plays the kind of Ebony Maw character in the Infinity Gauntlet comic. Like the sort of like he's not a servant to Thanos in that comic, but he kind of flatters Thanos, and a lot of the lines that they pulled for Ebony Maw from the movie came straight from Mephisto in that comic. So it's like he is kind of all over the place and operates in like cosmic stuff and in like Doctor Strange stuff. So it could work. I'm also just thinking unrelated to Mephisto for a second, and I hadn't thought about this, but you're right. There is a big thing in the comics with Dr. Doom trying to, I think that the way that he gets the scars on his face in the comics is he's actually trying to build a machine that will allow him to like travel to the afterlife and try to like retrieve his mom who's died. And, you know, all of this stuff has been convoluted and built on or whatever. But whether or not they ever would do anything like that, you are right that there's this big thing with Doom and his mother. And I've never thought before, but that's another thing that they could kind of like, they could do a play on, depending on what version of like Tony Stark meets Dr. Doom we're getting. Like I'm thinking about the like he killed my mom line in Civil War from Tony. And they have laid the groundwork for some of these things.
But that, now it's Doom saying this about his mother.
Right. Like you could imagine a world where like that clearly, you know, decades later, like hit a nerve for Tony in like the universe where Tony's the hero. So you do wonder if something similar happens, how much has that driven this other Tony, if that is who Dr. Doom is in Doomsday, to do whatever he's done. This not really to Ironheart, but
I
thought experiment.
I love that, by the way. Back to Mephisto for a second, just because it got me so excited. I thought the actual portrayal of, like, I love that scene. I love the scene with him in the hood, and I love the scene with him and Riri.
Yeah,
that the betrayal of him as the devil was unbelievable as far as like believable and convincing and never like directly overtly threatening, but the ultimate deceiver.
Yeah.
And coming up with these like bargains that you accept, like he didn't make you do it, but you accept it. And then you have to deal with the consequences of it. I thought the one split second shot of the reflection in the spoon of him looking like classic Mephisto was a really great way to disguise kind of what's going on.
Which I had to go back and find. You flagged that and I had missed that initially.
Well, because think about if he looked like that just sitting at the pizza restaurant, it'd be stupid.
Yeah.
He'd be like, why is this devil character sitting there? So he can change his appearance. All this happening over pizza.
Yeah.
And then
the accent going in and out.
And then like sometimes he's whispering to her like Professor X, but not actually opening his mouth. But sometimes all of a sudden his voice will drop an octave.
Yeah.
It was on the release.
For 1 second, you're like, what the heck?
Yeah.
I
feel like you're supposed to feel like she feels, and that you're sort of disoriented, but also kind of like entranced.
Yes, exactly. And I don't think they could have done it better, because I also love that they took famous lines from Riri through all six episodes that we saw in the trailer that we just thought were like, I want to build something iconic.
Yeah.
Like that was just like, okay, she wants to build something iconic. And he brings it back here but now it's him saying it to her. And so you're seeing it through her perspective, but Mephisto's narrating it. You want something iconic. It was like, oh my gosh, like it tied it all together.
Yeah.
Somehow. I'm really excited about it.
And I mean, I feel like it fits with the character. Like she is someone that has a lot to prove and she like wants, we're realizing like what she really wants. And I like that the show got into this in the last couple of episodes. Like it's not just that she's got an axe to grind that she wants to show who she is and what she can do. It's that she kind of has this like traumatic need to try to protect the people around her, which again, I really like as kind of a legacy follow-up to Tony Stark, because that was sort of his downfall at certain points, was like he was so obsessed with protecting people that sometimes he like could lose the forest for the trees. And I think that having like teeing her up in that way is like, it speaks to that legacy, but also in a way that I think is more personal to her. And my sense in the end is that to the extent she's taking the deal, it's not that she's doing it because she wants the best suit and the best tech and the most fame. It's now kind of back to being about Natalie, I think.
Oh, I think for sure.
And that
she gets her back.
And that's what like, I think that puts an interesting wrinkle on it, which also I think,
because she specifically says, this is only going to affect me. Correct.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
like trying to clarify, I guess that doesn't spread to people she loves.
So is your read that she thinks that they make the deal, that's what she's wanting, and she thinks that what she's getting back is Natalie AI, but she actually is getting Natalie the real person?
Oh, see, I thought that behind the scenes the deal was that she was going to get her back as a person, but you're right, because they hug and she's shocked. Remember? Yeah. She touches her and she's like, what the heck?
And she's like, run diagnostics. And she's like, what?
And the AI has no, the AI person or Natalie, who she thinks is AI, has no idea what's been going on.
Yeah.
So I guess, she makes the deal for the AI just as her friend. And instead it's actually her.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll be right back.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Craftsman Days are here at Lowe's with big savings on the tools you need. Right now, get a free select tool when you buy the Craftsman V20 2-Pack Battery Kit. Whether it's the backyard, the bathroom, or beyond, Craftsman has the tools to help you power through and get the project done right. Because DIYing is unpredictable, but your tools shouldn't be. Shop Craftsman at Lowe's today. Valid through 7/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a workload is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
We talked last week about how this show has had lots of little ways that they connect us to the MCU. There was a lot more of that here. I already talked about Dormammu, Doctor Strange, Caecilius, etc. I think they actually said Stephen Strange or Doctor Strange in this chunk of episodes. There's a moment where they're testing the hood in episode 4 and she says, I don't know, it's not Wakanda, it's not Kree, it's not Stark, it's not Pym.
Yeah.
Which it's just subtle things like that where I'm like, yes. Like she's aware of all the like top technology places, you know? I also thought there was a lot of fun parallels. We've talked about the parallels between her and Tony Stark. There were a lot of parallels just to the Iron Man films as well. Like having to go into the garage and build a suit, AKA like a cave.
Yeah. Without Which everything I love the, that suit also.
It looks pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then I thought there was even shades of Iron Man 3 when she's in the restaurant and her suit isn't working. And the crazy person that seems unbeatable is attacking her. And she has to like, you know, maneuver something in the kitchen.
Yeah.
Very similar to cheap trick and a cheesy one liner. That's true. Yeah. You know? So there were a lot of like Iron Man, and she was without her suit, you know?
Yeah.
A lot of like Iron Man elements. I also really appreciate that when you think about, you know, she glorifies Iron Man and wants to make this Iron Man suit to protect her people. But I love that they also didn't then also just assume that she would also have all the weaponizing of the suit. So she does build a really nice suit, but all she has is like the repulsor blasts. I think one of the things that makes Tony different is that he's coming from a weapons manufacturer.
Yeah.
So I'm thankful that they didn't have her also rig up like the Bunker Buster in a suit and, you know, lasers. And that's a one-off, like all those extra weapons, missiles, et cetera. That would be where I'm like, okay, she's building missiles in this garage.
Yeah.
And they don't do that. It's like, she's using the suit to protect, but she's not used to using it for like war.
Yeah. Well, and I think that like, I liked the battles between her and Stain for that reason too. Like, it kind of shows it shows their different approaches, but you're right. It also shows kind of the difference between her and Tony and War Machine. But I also like it showcased different technology, even just visually. Like, obviously they're different because his is biometrically infused or whatever, and hers is a suit. But I thought that like it was nice seeing that they're both kind of coming from a similar like technology as the base, and to see that go in different directions.
Well, and it tied into, I think, episode 2 or 3, where he was real excited about, think about all the things we can do with prosthetics and bionics.
Right.
That he was more into that anyways. So it made sense to me.
And I also like on that front, I liked that he kind of got hoodwinked, no pun intended, into like giving someone else admin access, because they had sort of showed at the start that he's like overly gullible and not like he didn't even consider the fact that they were going to put in a backdoor thing like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Also the fact that the finale didn't turn into this famous third act battle thing. Yeah. She goes in and she has to fight him twice. Zeke, that is.
Yeah.
And then the hood thing, I mean, some people could see it as anticlimactic, but I thought not drawing it out to some long bout where he like has all Doctor Strange magic, let's say, or something. That's the right call. It was like one subtle trick of an illusion that she had from the magic in the suit. And all she had to do was pull the hood off him. It's not like he's some crazy superpowered person. So to some people, maybe that's disappointing. To me, I thought it was the right call to not have that be the focal point at all. She just wants to physically take the cape off him.
Yeah. No, I think, it feels like the important thing is that someone else is taking it from you. Because obviously he can take it off and put it up on the thing when he's not using it.
Sure.
But I feel like, it's, so that feels like they're at least kind of establishing a rule. But I agree. I was really happy with the finale as a whole. There was a point where I wondered if like the background that we were getting about Parker and his dad was a little unnecessary. But I think that it kind of shows, it gives you a sense of where he's coming from, at least. Like, they don't really try to make it something. They don't lean too hard into him being the relatable villain, even though they do try that to some degree.
And that was episode 5, really. So I was okay with, like, the finale starts with just the flashback of that robbery gone wrong, which I appreciate, because then you see Mephisto, like how he got out of the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
But I know what you're saying. Yeah. For a minute I was like, the whole dad thing, I was like, okay, but I dislike it.
Yeah, I think in general, I'm at this point, and it's funny because we're always going to be negating ourselves depending on like where we are in the stage of this stuff. There was a point where we were really glad that we were getting so many like thoughtful looks at the motivations behind these villains, and that they weren't just like, we want to take over the world. But there is a point where I'm kind of like,
yeah, right.
it's okay if he's just
trying to take over the world.
If he's just a crook and he wants power, you know, like that, that is a, like, it doesn't necessarily need to be that he's like wounded by a father that abandoned him.
And he wants like his dad's mansion.
Okay. Like
any mansion would have done.
I at least appreciated it kind of roots. It at least makes the character recognizable, like his motivations, like you get why he was so desperate in that moment and why he wants exactly the thing that he wants, even if he also, like, more broadly does just want to be a big deal.
And it was pretty brutal what his dad did. Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just like so and casual I think about it.
It gives like Mephisto an opening to be.
Yeah. That's a good point. It might not have been as vulnerable of a moment.
Right.
If he didn't have the stuff with his dad.
Because he's kind of giving Parker what his dad would not. And and it just, again, it kind of shows you. It winds up working as a way of giving you a little bit more insight into what's going on at the end of the episode, because with Parker, you can kind of see even more clearly how he's being manipulated in the moment. Like, even whenever he starts to get up and leave and he's like, ah, you know, I'm wasting your time. And then Parker's like, no. Like, you see how he finds people at their most desperate and when their guard's down. And I thought it was effective on that front. I did want both characters to ask, like, whenever he's like, oh, all I'll take is, it's not even something that you'll miss. I would love for them to just be like, yeah, but just curious, what is it though? I know I won't miss it, but can you?
Legit, what did he mean though?
I think soul, right? I think that's the...
Like, meaning your soul's already rotten, so you're not going to miss it?
I just take it as him, as it's just kind of a like, don't worry about it. Like...
For sure. I just didn't know what it, when I read about him, apparently it was his soul. Like, apparently in the comics, he's been defeated before, but he gets brought back because humanity's souls are evil at times.
Mm.
So just like generically speaking, I guess.
Yeah.
So he kind of I think that's the understanding, is that you get this power, but he's physically feeding off your bad decisions, or whenever you're executing this evil move, gives him power in life. That's the trade, I think.
Yeah. Well, and that's where I'm just kind of like, I would have hoped that Riri, she is more like, she pushes back more and questions him way more than Parker did, which I appreciate, because that kind of shows their differences. But I do wish that she would have pushed back a little bit more than she did. But I also feel like that's part of the effect that we're supposed to be picking up from, like, the distorted voice and the different cuts. Like, I think we're supposed to get the sense that she's not fully in her right mind anyway. Like, she's kind of not that she's being mind controlled, but that she's like in a particularly persuadable state in that moment.
Yeah. I also just want to add that I actually found it kind of funny at times. I feel like the humor was balanced really well. Anika and I thought it was pretty funny when they're trying to break into Joe's bunker and Riri goes, okay, blow it up. And then the AI Natalie goes like, can you check under the rug first or something? Yeah. Says a funnier way of saying that.
Yeah.
And I'm like a 13-year-old boy when it comes to a well-timed groin kick can still make me laugh. When they're like talking about it, I can't remember the line, shoot. But they're like setting it up and she's like, this is what I have to do. And Joe's like, you know what? That's a good point. That's probably going to work. and then she does it. And he says something like, you know, that was a swift kick. You got all of it or whatever. Yep. You got all of it. Something like that. It still made me laugh.
No, it was good.
I, for the most part, thought it was doing pretty well. And then like with the Hood family stuff, like the critique I started the show with. The gang stuff, like the family that they're trying to be. So like at the same time, I don't want it to become Disney Channel and like, I don't want that dynamic to feel off. And at times it's a little bit like we talked about last episode, a little bit like here's all the crew, but I appreciated it more here as it starts unraveling. That to me felt more believable. And I think like the way the Hood kicks them out really worked to me. So for the most part, I think it kind of came back around. And when Joe's lying, and he grabs him by the neck, and then like later when he's kind of turning into almost like a werewolf or something, I kind of bought the whole dynamic of him losing it. And then the family being like, what the heck? This is not what we signed up for. And him, you know what I mean? I don't know. It just got better to me.
No. And I think that's right. And like, it does give you an opportunity to see him, like to see the impact and to see how other people are perceiving. Sorry, still getting
Robbie's coming off the flu, by the way. This is Robbie's flu game. Flu game.
It's giving us an opportunity to see how other people are reacting to the change in personality. And I do think if we didn't have those characters around, then we wouldn't really have anyone for him to play off of. So I do think it's important. And yeah, you're right. Like having them be like, I think if I had my druthers, it would be like, they would be more like super people. Cause that's kind of what I think of the Hood's gang as being, like more lower level still, but like super villains. But you know, I recognize that that doesn't make as much sense for the scope of the story.
Yeah. And per the post-credit sequence, it's still technically possible, right? Like he could go get some magic, get some version of a Hood back and then get like this time go like, I need a more powerful gang. This
and that's one other thing that I liked about, I mean, we talked about that last episode when we were talking about who's giving him the power, because throughout the Hood's career in the comics, he's always like, he goes after the Infinity Stones at one point. He goes after like the Norn Stones from Asgard at one point. Like,
wow.
Basically anything that will kind of give him the leg up, like the supernatural power, he just realizes that like that's the thing where it's like he wants ultimate power, but he uses it in a very targeted, like, I just want to be a crime boss way, so that it kind of makes him way outsized in that particular context, which I think makes for a really interesting character if they run with it, because it's not like Thanos, who wants to use the Infinity Stones to alter all of life. He just like wants to use it to like be a big deal.
You know what I'm sitting here thinking as you're talking? I'm thinking that's also another reason why it works so well for this show to be in Chicago. Not only because Riri obviously is from there and she can own it and it's a different city, but you know, that's one way Marvel could explain away some of these stories if you didn't set them all in the same place. When everything's in New York, you start then asking, even with Thunderbolts, you go like, well, where was Spider-Man? Did Spider-Man not feel the effects of what Bob was doing or whatever? Or how does this now work with Mayor Fisk, who doesn't want vigilantes, and now there's a new Avengers team in his city? And I was just thinking like, yeah, you know what the easiest way to do? Get away with that is? Make the Hood in Chicago, where Kingpin is not the crime boss in Chicago. He's not the mayor. He's not running the show there.
Yeah, that's a really
good
point.
It's kind of actually surprising they don't do that more. I'm just thinking out loud. Like you could put more stories in, like put one in Houston, let's say, and you would, that's how you go like, well, yeah, Spider-Man's not here. He's in New York or whatever. If you don't want it to infringe ever.
The original, the Iron Man Extremis comic that so much of Iron Man 1 and Iron Man 3 was based on in the comic takes place in Austin.
Really?
They obviously did not run with that.
They didn't do it, but what I'm saying. Like, maybe do something else in Austin then, maybe. I'm just kind of thinking of this.
No, that is true. I always like when we start to see stuff like that.
There is one Nashville reference in the MCU, though, in that movie. When he says, like, how far away is Nashville?
Yeah.
And they go to Rose Hill or something? A fake city, I think. But
which is also funny because I'm like, of all the places where you're going to go and it's going to be like extra cold and snowy, I don't think Tennessee is the
I've
spot.
Always thought that's so funny. Where I'm at in Nashville specifically, we get snow legitimately 2 to 3 times a year for like one day. So there's maybe 5 days total have snow on the ground. So it's so funny that they're choosing this place to be like so cold and like constantly snowing Christmas. Like, why not theoretically make that Indiana?
Right. Yeah.
And still kind of have like it be backwoodsy.
Yeah. Or like Indiana. Wisconsin. Like,
yeah. Yeah. True. It's so funny. Yeah.
I do like, I feel like they want the kind of like Southern, like bar,
which is why I said Indiana still backwoodsy. Wisconsin has a different kind. It's not the Southern accent, but there's definitely like in the sticks of like Michigan, you can find that same vibe for sure.
Yeah.
okay. Here, basically I don't have much left. I'm really excited about the show. I just want to close it with two thoughts from me just to reiterate everything. One, I'm just so thankful taking a quick glance at where we're at this exact second, that this show is pretty good to really good in that it's definitely not going to slow down any momentum. There was a fear that it's like, oh man, we have Thunderbolts, which is so good. And we think Fantastic Four is going to be good, but they have this one leftover show that has to go here. And one, I'm just on a quality standpoint, so thankful that it really doesn't dip much. Yes, you have little qualms here or there, but it feels like a pretty freaking good MCU television show to me, with characters I did not think I'd be saying that about. And then secondly, I'm just thankful that even plot-wise, like when Ironheart was announced, I thought it's going to be Iron Man, but with a different person trying to make the suit and fight a similar Iron Man villain, and that's what it was going to be. But the fact that we now brought in Dormammu and Doctor Strange and Mephisto, now it feels like also tonally, like we're talking about, it kind of leads into the next era. So some people on Discord were saying, is this technically phase 5 now, do you think, or phase 6? One, I think the phases don't matter like they used to. It's right. changed so much. But two, I could see this as a pretty good kickoff to phase 6 with Thunderbolts being the close of phase 5 now. I think if it was just an Iron Man throwback show, then I wouldn't have felt as strongly about that. But this bringing in Mephisto and magic and maybe potentially tying into Doctor Doom feels like this could be a way that it, I mean, my point is it now feels like we're leading, like we're not going different directions now. It feels like they're going the same way. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, for sure. I feel the same way. And I saw Coogler's comment there and that made me happy. It also just made me happy to see him talking about the kind of build up for Secret Wars and it kind of detecting some excitement from him on that.
And he said, quote, yes, working when in regards to Black Panther 3. So
Yeah. I think I'm almost leaning towards pulling it back towards like closer to Wakanda Forever because
in our watch.
Yeah, just because I do think that I was reading something from the
And by the way, rewatch order, that could be fine. That's different. I'm just saying as far as chronologically, the way they are doing it, I could see how you could view it as the start of phase 6.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I read that it's supposed to take place between 6 months to a year after Wakanda Forever.
Yeah, I saw that.
And so, you know, I do kind of think that it could work as a nice transition from that movie into some of the kind of multiverse of madness type stuff that we get. But
yeah, that could work and be fun.
But that's, and that's something that we are kind of continuing to discuss on our newsletter, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
If you want to subscribe to that, we have our weekly newsletter that Greg Arnold puts together and does a great job with. And we also have some other written pieces that come out. One is we're kind of in the midst of figuring out what the rewatch order is going to be moving into the, you know, Fantastic Four and beyond, kind of everything up until that point. And also, as a shout out, Greg put out a written review of Ironheart that I thought was really great and came out right when our initial reaction did. So if you are someone that is hungry for as much information on the stuff as you can get that is spoiler free, another thing that you get automatically when you subscribe, that's all free. So there's no reason not to do it. And there's a lot of great stuff there.
Yep.
The only other thing I was going to say is I really think, like, just stepping back and looking at the show, I don't want to be, I mean, this doesn't feel that controversial, but I'm just kind of thinking about where this fits for me in the overall Disney Plus Marvel slate.
Oh.
And I'm not saying we rank it, but just kind of gut feeling. And I really think that, like, I can argue that this is on par with like a Hawkeye, which I think is a really good, in retrospect, like really good Marvel show. It's not Daredevil Born Again. It's not WandaVision. It's not Loki. It's probably, it doesn't necessarily have some of the kind of like emotional highs for me that Moon Knight does.
Here it is.
But I think that it's not like, I would put this over Falcon Winter Soldier, I think.
Oh, for sure. I'm just going to say what you said to me. And I know we haven't. Okay, hold on. You said to me on the phone that this is like towards the top tier. And I know you're not retracting that statement.
No.
I'm with you. I don't think it's right now. I think at the very top, we have like Loki season 2, WandaVision, Daredevil.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's that, but I don't. Yeah. It for sure. In that next chunk, like, Moon Knight, She-Hulk, Agatha in that next chunk
Yeah.
I mean, it's just as good as those to me.
I think that's right. And, you know, it's like at that point, it starts
Hawkeye,
to become...
same. Yeah.
Yeah, it starts to become preference.
But in my opinion, it doesn't have the negative turn that Ms. Marvel and Echo both had.
Right.
It doesn't have some of the controversy that the Falcon, Winter Soldier, and Secret Invasion had.
Yeah.
So I was anticipating this being like a tier four show, and I think it's like a top of tier two show.
Yeah. I think it's, again,
which is
that's
crazy.
Why
maybe that's hot take. I don't know, but.
No, I mean, I think that that's another example of like, maybe it is a hot take, but I think if it is, it is because of where we are at this moment. Like, yep. And not from the like, oh, everyone's down on Marvel thing, but more just like,
right.
There's such a narrative now, like that narrative did not impact Thunderbolts or Fantastic Four, because I think that the narrative that we have talked about, that the press has, that has trickled down to fans, is this like,
yeah,
Marvel regrets going all in on Disney Plus. Marvel feels like it spread itself too thin on Disney Plus, and that impacted movies, and now it's pulled back, and now starting with Thunderbolts, it's going to have really good movies. And it's just kind of funny how, like, I mean, that could be wrong, right? Yeah. Like Fantastic Four could be a massive flop, but I think it's kind of setting it up for people to then go and see Fantastic Four and be like, wow, yeah, this is it. Marvel's pulled it together. And watch Ironheart and be like, see, this is why, like, this old Disney Plus stuff. And I just think you have to sometimes, like, those narratives are all well and good and have truth to them, but you also have to look at the thing itself. And I just think that if this had come out,
yeah,
when Hawkeye came out, like, when people were still giving this stuff the benefit of the doubt and not,
that's the point,
looking for it to have signs of like reshoots or whatever, then I think people would have thought like, wow, yeah, this is a really fun look at the MCU.
I'm not going to get into a whole 10 minute. We're not spending 10 minutes on this. Okay. If we do, I'm editing it out. But the whole conversation is such a catch-22. It's kind of like chicken or the egg thing. On one hand, I kind of hate bringing it up at times because I'm also like, sometimes I feel like that's the only way to validate the hate is if we keep talking about it.
Yeah.
And I think, But yet it's still kind of unavoidable. Like I posted a social media clip just literally of 90 seconds of me from our podcast praising Thunderbolts. And a couple of the comments on there were so ridiculous.
Yeah.
Like you would go to our TikTok, you can see it, that you're like, there's no way these people exist, but they do exist. So it becomes, and then like you think like, okay, well, don't talk about it. It's not a thing. Well, I don't know if you saw this, Ironheart got review bombed down to 32% fan score. Listen to this, before it released.
Yeah. Oh no, of course. Yeah.
So the people were saying it was a failure before they've seen a second of it. And so,
yeah.
I mean, that's literally just, I think, racism.
Dude, I mean
literally straight up racism. I mean,
there is like, and even that is frustrating because you say that and everyone's like, oh, okay, well, yeah, you're going to play that card. But it's even like, when,
but that's
Sinners
what it is. If you
out,
haven't seen it, you literally haven't seen it.
Well, like when Sinners came out, and I can't remember if we talked about this on the podcast or not, but it was such a fascinating like journey of that narrative, like in terms of where it started and where it ended, because it's like, first it was forecast that it was going to be a, if not a box office bomb, it was going to be a massive loss because of how much money the studio had spent on it. Then it was, okay, it's actually projected to make a little bit more, but the studio is still going to lose money because of this crazy deal that they did with Ryan Coogler. And then finally it's like, wow, this is a crazy victory for Ryan Coogler. And now they need to look at it as a franchise. And it's just funny how like this stuff gets established ahead of time. And some of it does feel like, I don't know if we would have these narratives going, no, if this were from a different set
it's
of
a
creators.
Sensitive subject for me because this happens in Kirk's career. Like this is exactly what happens right now. Hollywood and the fan community around it is mirroring sports, which is like these narratives get made and then they get pushed, even mm-hmm. if they're not true. They're not true at all. But as long as you're loud about it on the internet, that becomes like the prevailing thought. And so I think the only way to combat, I think, is for us to not talk about it as much. But I also just like pray that we can, as a society, get back to viewing this less combatively in general. Like I don't want to combat about the box office or the Rotten Tomatoes score as much.
Right.
Like when I turned on Ironheart, the beauty was I literally am still able to watch it as a fan. Like, I'm like, yeah. I like these things. Oh, it's connected. That's really fun. And I'm trying to just generally and like genuinely give it like the benefit of the doubt. Like, meaning I'm going into, like, I've selected to watch it because I want it to be good.
Yeah.
And so, like, if you're already review bombing it before it's even out, you've already made up your mind that, like, you, like, my point is, like, it's, there's no fun in it for you.
Right.
So can we just get back to not as much worrying about all that, like, all the peripherals about it? Like, I thought the show was good. Can not every show be Marvel's back, Marvel's lost their way?
Right.
Like even on our comments on our social media, back off on the, on, like,
yeah,
we're watching because we like to watch it.
Right.
Not because we're a shill or not because we're not critical enough or because we're too critical. Like, just shut up. Like, can we all just watch it for fun, please? Like, this racist review bombing is unbelievable. Like, what do you gain from it?
Just go
back to watching it with the intention of you want it to be good. And if you don't want it to be good, then don't watch it and don't go on the internet and ruin it for other people.
Yeah. I think that this is a good...
It's like humanity 101 here.
Dude, no, I think people... like, first and foremost, people, and all of us sometimes, need to just, like, get a life. Like, yeah, like, it, like, it's, dude, not...
get off the internet. Go outside and do something.
It is not, like, you don't have ownership over it. It's not core to your identity as a person. Like,
that's what's so surprising to me, is, like, I post this, like, out of genuine excitement. Then you see some comments. I'm like, dude, go do something else.
Yeah.
Like... yeah. Get go on a walk, go into nature, do something else, man. Like, this is brutal.
It is like a,
it's such a good word.
I mean, it's crazy how often people tell me about touch grass. Tell me about,
have you heard that before?
Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, how they'll ask me questions about a Marvel thing and they'll be like, oh, well, you know, like, I know that it's supposed to be like X.
They all have to give a disclaimer now. Every casual has to go, oh, is Marvel up? Are they down? Like, just watch the project.
Well, and I know a lot of people that spend, it seems like, based on the questions they ask me, a decent amount of time on Marvel Reddit, enough to be like, oh, but did you see like this? And there's this concern. People are mad about this, but haven't like watched the thing that the Marvel Reddit threads are about. And at that point, I'm like, I'm not, like, you're not doing anything wrong. But like, why? Like, what?
The community has lost.
Yeah,
they've lost it. We've lost it, dude.
I do think it's an important thing to note right now.
I also hate the barometer thing, by the way, from casuals. That's what I mean.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I hate this. Like, someone wants to come talk to me about how they liked Agatha. Like, my friend Micah, he says, I want to talk about Agatha. You don't have to then give the disclaimer of like, well, they were down, but now I liked Agatha, so now we're here. Who knows what the next one? Like, oh my gosh, it's a separate project. Did you like it or not? Let's just talk about it. That's it.
Right. No, it is like, that's an exhausting thing. And I think what I was going to say, we're like, it's well-timed because, you know, and we're not getting into it now, if we ever get into it, but like, we are about to be in July. And in July, we're going to have Superman on July 11th and then Fantastic Four on July 25th. And it is already being teed up as this kind of like either or thing. Like, and for the record, just to say, I am really excited about the prospect of a great Superman movie. And everything that I'm seeing about this one makes me excited. Like, it feels like it's got what I have been wanting from a Superman movie. Like, it's colorful, it's got heart to it, it's not retreading these same things. I am rooting for that movie to be great. I do not need that movie to be bad so that I can then like Fantastic Four. I don't need Fantastic Four to be better than Superman. They can both be great doing totally different things, but I know that that's like, we are immediately going to be having that conversation as soon as either of those movies come out, which is fine. But it's just like, I think that it's a good thing to kind of get our heads around now, because I think largely pointless conversation.
The conversation is mostly for you and I too, you know, because it's like, so often you and I are the old people. We're like, we started this podcast because we wanted to go back through movies that we loved. not because we wanted to have conversations about who won July,
right?
DC right. or Marvel. That wasn't like, I liked the Batman. I didn't have a conversation about, is the Batman better than
right.
whatever. Like, it's just,
no, I think,
okay. That's a good transition for us because I just want to close the episode with a little bit of scheduling. It's almost July. Like you said, on Friends from Work Plus, we still need to get into, the Fantastic Four Silver Surfer film.
Yes.
And then the 2015 Fantastic Four film will be the following week. So those are coming up.
Yeah. I also wanted to flag, this is, I'm making my way through the Fantastic Four Solve Everything book.
Okay.
That I recently got from Organic Price Books.
There you go.
Also something, this is mostly the material that you and I talked about in our last Fantastic Four comics episode.
Yeah.
So that's also on Friends from Work Plus. So it's all kind of Fantastic Four FFW Plus related. But
and that's what I was gonna say. Like once July starts, not only those bonus episodes, we are gonna do one more part of our ranking series we've been doing. We ranked everything in the Infinity Saga, then we ranked right. all the multiversal films. Now that we've seen Ironheart, we're gonna do an official ranking of the Disney Plus shows.
Yeah.
So those are, it's like a 3-part series right now before Fantastic Four. But after that, we're talking on Friends from Work Plus doing those old movies. And then we're going to start doing some preview. You and I still don't know when we're going to see First Steps. I saw that the world premiere is actually 2 weeks in advance. I think it's like July 10, which
oh wow,
typically means they're fairly confident to set the premiere that early. That's a generalization, yeah. but that's been the history of it so far. So there'll probably be a Superman episode, but it's going to be a lot of like you and I prepping for First Steps and then seeing First Steps and then being out at Comic-Con while First Steps comes out. So
yeah,
July is going to be, I guess I'm saying this all to say, if you're just finding this podcast because of this episode, because of Ironheart, don't leave us because July is going to be a banger, banger alert.
Yeah. And I do think we'll probably try to get an episode on Superman if we have time.
Yeah, I think so. That screener's got to be really soon, probably next week.
Yeah,
I would imagine. Thank you so much for listening and going along on this journey with us. Let us know your thoughts on anything Ironheart or Fantastic Four related. And if not, nothing else, we'll see you next week here on Friends from Work.
Build a polished wardrobe that shows you stay you wherever you go with Mack Weldon. Use code MACK25 for 25% off your first order of $125 or more at MackWeldon.com.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today.
Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.